The question of who has power in the economy and who benefits from value are fundamental questions in how we architect an economy that works for people and planet. So it's both this micro, what does it mean for a business, and how do you build something that's truly aligned and change the core driving principle behind decision making from profits to your purpose? And it's this
Purpose
macro, what would a
projects.
world look like if all businesses were not profit maximizing, but really had the liberty to make nuanced decisions in response to a very complicated world?
Welcome to another brand new episode of Purpose Projects, the podcast with the sustainably good stuff. As you might already know, my name is Boris, and I'm passionate about all things PR and communications fixated on green and sustainable solutions.
And also, hello from my side. I'm Moritz. I work in the innovation industry, and like Boris, I'm also passionate about sustainable business models and solutions. And one thing I learned early on is that true sustainable business models are sustainable from the core, and that's going to be the topic of today. In today's episode, we'll be talking about stewardship ownership. You've never heard about the model? Then this one's for you. Steward-owned companies legally commit to one, self-governance, so that means the control stays within the company, and two, reinvesting profits. And the people behind Purpose Economy are those who help companies achieve such. And for that, we invited Camille Cannon, the executive director of Purpose Foundation, who is currently located in San Francisco. She'll be talking it in a comprehensive manner. It's a quite difficult topic, but it's also going to be a very fun one. And yeah, I think this episode is going to shed a light on a very important topic. Have fun.
Today, we are talking to Camille Cannon. Welcome to the podcast, Camille. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us. We would like to just dive right into our convo, actually. In our research, we found a lot of interesting things that we can talk about with you today. Let's start off by focusing where you actually come from and why today you are where you are. First question from my side would be, how did you end up going to Mount Holyoke College, what is a private liberal arts women's college in Massachusetts, so in the US, which is actually a member of elite women's colleges in the northeast of US and had, I think, pretty prominent students such as Emily Dickinson or Chloe Zhao, who actually just won an Oscar. So tell us a little bit more about that.
So I grew up in Massachusetts, and it's a pretty common thing. If you grow up in a good town and are from some privilege, that when you are looking at colleges, you take like an East Coast tour. And so you drive around with your parents or you take a plane or whatever. You go down to DC and you go to New York and you go up to Maine, you see all the schools. I really didn't want to go to college. So when I was 16, I applied for a scholarship to go to Germany. I got the scholarship. And so I was making this decision about where to go to university before I traveled abroad to Germany. And at the time, I really advocated for, can I just do this year and then figure out what I want to do? Like, this feels like it's going to be a big thing in my life. And my parents were like, no, you have to apply to college. You have to figure it out. And so I toured with my dad. We spent a couple of days, went to every school. I didn't like any of them. And when we got to Mount Holyoke, it was the last school. And my grandmother had gone there. And I had seen a couple of other all-women's colleges and didn't want to go to an all-women's college. And we were parked on campus. And I said to my dad, like, can I actually just skip the interview? I know I'm not going to go here. Like, let's just save these people the time. And my dad said, well, look, if you do the interview and like we'll do the campus tour, then we can go to the archive and maybe see if there's any information about your grandmother, who I never knew. Did the interview, had a great campus tour, went to the archive and found all this cool information about when my grandmother had gone to college there. And I don't know. I was like, okay, this is it. I'm going here. It's the only school I applied to. And that's how it came to be.
So yeah, maybe it was fate. Who knows? You never get to know your grandma. But yeah, that's quite an interesting story. If you would have asked me why I chose my university, that's like the most boring story ever. So that's a good start in this interview. Well, I'm happy.
I think it's also in the, you know, choosing to go to an all-women's college is a very particular decision in and of itself. And so I think you have to have some motivation about why you want to go someplace to make that kind of choice.
Yeah, and from there you've gained quite some experience in the business world. We've seen that you've been in you're not new to the startup game. So I think you worked in in the mobile sector actually. It was a startup in Berlin, I think, and you also worked in the real estate. So those are already two very different sectors where you are right now. So how did you end up at the Purpose Foundation? What's the journey like?
Yeah, it was a crooked path. And the common theme throughout was I am unbelievably lucky and have, in every situation I found myself in, have been lucky enough to be working with people who gave me far more responsibility than I was actually qualified for. And I love a challenge. And so I tend to meet that expectation. And so I moved to Berlin after I graduated from college. I worked, as you're saying, in a couple of startups, one consumer package good or consumer products in particular, and then another. I ended up running a startup for a friend that was an affiliate marketing startup, which was a great experience. I learned how to, you know, run a dev team and go to market and raise capital and do all this stuff. And I moved back to the States almost 5 years ago now. My family was based out here. And to be honest with you, I had spent 8 winters in Berlin and was done with the cold. I could not handle it anymore. And I was coming back to see my parents and, you know, spending a couple of weeks in sunny California and thought to myself, why are you making the choice that you're making? You could also live here. And so when I moved back, a friend randomly gave me a call and said, hey, what are you doing right now? This guy that I know is a real estate developer from New York. He has a bunch of projects in his hometown. And I think you two would really hit it off. And so I drove 2 hours north or an hour and a half north of San Francisco to a town called Santa Rosa that I never knew existed before and ended up running a set of real estate development projects that were focused on affordable housing and community development. I opened up a hotel. We did a bunch of public-private partnerships with the city and county, went through the whole planning process for affordable housing. And spent about a year doing that and had this realization during that time that, well, the claim of this work, being about the community and being about economic development and the benefit of the people, the actual living human beings who are, you know, live around this 2-block radius that I was concentrated on, that claim is not actually being fulfilled. And a big part of the reason why it's not being fulfilled is because the way that we are financing things fundamentally is misaligned with the ambition of doing something good for that community. And that basically sent me down a spiral of curiosity. So I started reading a lot and, couldn't quite, scratch that itch in a different way. And I reached out to my friend, Paul, who I worked for in Berlin and ran the startup for, and said, he's a wonderful mentor. And I said, Paul, these are the things that I'm thinking about. I'm like, what do I do next? And he said, well, this is odd because I just had these 4 German co-founders of this organization called Purpose sitting at my office, asking if I knew anybody in San Francisco who was bilingual and had a lot of operational experience. And so it was total kismet. I had never, was not a legal geek before, hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about ownership, governance, and finance. I really fell into it and for which I am endlessly grateful. Like, it was wonderful serendipity.
So that was actually take 2 in faith being really good to you, actually, after choosing college, in this regard, work, in this case, in Purpose Foundation somehow also played a role, would you say?
Yeah, I mean, I've joked in the past, like, I feel like I'm like one of those seated Buddhas, like, you should rub my belly for luck. I wish that I could claim that I'm so incredibly intelligent and, you know, here are all the reasons why I've made it as far as I have and done the things that I do. The reality of it is that people have been very trusting and, have met my desire for challenge with really, really good opportunities. So it's mostly fate.
Yeah, that's quite an incredible journey. Kudos actually to you, first of all, for sticking it out for 8 winters in Berlin. We have to give you props for that. But besides that, it's basically a pretty remarkable journey to the point where you are today. Moritz, before we transition to our next segment, talking about actually what the theme of today's talk is or will be, we have a segment called Purpose Preguntas. 5 short questions with preferably 5 short answers.
Okay.
Moritz, do you want me to start?
Yeah.
I'll just start. Camille, what do you prefer, home office or real office?
Home office.
Better place to live, Berlin or San Francisco?
San Francisco.
This goes quick. I like that. What is your best news source for good business?
Oh, that's a good one. I think it depends on what this is the bad short answer. It depends
almost jinxed
on
it.
What kind of business news I want to read. Exactly.
No, it depends is also a short answer. That's
it
okay.
It depends.
All right, Boris is in a nice mood today. So, okay, I'll go on with the next question. Purpose washing has gained a lot of momentum in the last 2 years. True or false?
True.
And last one, what skill did you learn during the pandemic that you did not have before?
To slow down.
Okay. That was already it. We did like this, or we do this segment because all our guests, they all have so many stuff to, or so many insights to share. We have actually a part 2 coming up at the end. So I think now we should talk about actually the purpose economy. A lot of people have already read the name already in this episode title. And people are asking themselves, okay, purpose is a thing. Yeah, I've heard about. I think this is the 25th episode. So I hope our listeners know what we're talking about all the time. Purpose economy, we'll get into that. But your specific topic is called steward ownership. And I think that's a term a lot of people have not heard about. So maybe in your own words, what's it about and why is it so much needed at the moment?
So steward ownership, let me just start off by saying, is a term we invented. And we didn't invent the concept of it, though. We just named it. The concept of steward ownership can be found basically throughout histories and throughout culture. I think in Europe, you know, the greatest examples of it are Bosch and Novo Nordisk, these large industrial foundations all represent the principles of steward ownership. And I think what's fundamentally different, I'm trying to think of the simplest way to give this explanation because it's not super obvious necessarily. Steward ownership describes a set of 2 core principles about the legal DNA of a business or of any entity or asset, really. But for this conversation, we're focused on businesses. And those 2 principles are 1, profits serve purpose. So what that means is rather than extracting value in perpetuity from a business, investors receive a risk-adjusted return. And beyond that, the majority of the profits are reinvested for the long-term purpose of the organization. The other core tenet is that the people inside the organization who day-to-day are making decisions and are closely connected to the challenges and opportunities on the ground, those are the folks who are holding the voting control over the business. Sometimes we talk about it like the steering wheel of the car. In some cases, like younger startups, that looks like founders, you know, two or three folks who start a business together, they hold the voting control of a company. In other cases, larger, more mature businesses, sometimes there's more elaborate governance structures to include other stakeholders who have participated in the value creation of that organization. Embedded in these two principles is a disruption of the normal relationship between money and power in our legal system. And by our legal system, I don't just mean the United States. This is a pretty core principle of the code of capital in modern legal systems, right? The more money you bring in, the more power you buy with that money. And through these ownership structures, we're disrupting that relationship. And that all sounds very technocratic, like here's legal forms and you have different share classes. But it's actually a really fundamental philosophical switch about what a company is and how people are working together. In the normal legal paradigm, a business is a commodity. The intention is to raise capital, to grow it, to sell it, to get rich, right? It's about private wealth creation and extraction. In this paradigm, what we're talking about is really stewardship of a company. That company doesn't exist for the private benefit of any one individual class or group of people, but rather it exists to further a purpose that a group of people are coming together to pursue. And I'll pause there because that's a lot of information, but the consequence of legal forms on culture and the long-term outcomes of a company are pretty profound.
Well, Camille, that was an awesome introduction into such a complex topic, actually. In your own words, why do you think the steward ownership is such an important topic at the moment?
I think it varies between cultures. So I think part of the reason why it's important, there are commonalities across regions. So I think across the board, it's important in where we work in Europe and the United States and Latin America, because you have a generation of founders who are starting businesses for reasons that go beyond just wanting to make a buck, right? They're starting businesses to have social impact, have environmental impact, or just provide quality jobs in their community and make cool products. Like, it doesn't have to be an elaborate social enterprise story. There's also just having a business as a purpose in and of itself. And I think those folks are finding it very difficult to actualize that impact and that vision within the existing legal system and financial system around startups. They're failing, not because they're failing in their businesses, but they're failing to find the tools in the market that really align with their long-term vision, which isn't about creating a business to be sold. They don't want to get on that treadmill. And so I think that's part of the reason why we're having such a moment of resonance around this work. The other part is, particularly in the United States, where, racial inequality and the chaos of the last year, I think, have highlighted more profoundly than ever before a real fundamental need for systems change in order to drive better long-term outcomes and create a just economy. The question of who has power in the economy and who benefits from value are fundamental questions in how we architect an economy that works for people and planet. So it's both this micro, what does it mean for a business and how do you build something that's truly aligned and change the core driving principle behind decision making from profits to your purpose? And it's this macro, what would a world look like if all businesses were not profit maximizing, but really had the liberty to make nuanced decisions in response to a very complicated world?
You touched on it already a little bit prior to that, what sort of like the businesses, the differences between the US and Germany are culturally and systematically. It's funny that because in our research, we, of course, also focused on Europe and so on, and wanted to see what the situation here, meaning in Europe, is like. So, for example, in Denmark, the concept is a little bit more widespread, for example, than in Germany or elsewhere. We found figures, I think, that around 60% of Danish stock index companies belong to themselves, as you might call it. Here in Germany, where we are right now, we have about 200 steward-owned companies in total. So what would you say, what are the regional differences in regards to the work your company is doing and what your organization, how it works internationally, what the core differences are in your work, not maybe in the global perspective of what purpose is around the world?
I think that the fundamental theory of change that we're working off of is the same. So we, you know, in every region where we are working, our goal is to create lighthouse examples to inspire people and make visible what this concept is in practice. We do that by creating resources and, you know, doing press and trying to get the word out and directly supporting businesses. Purpose in our ecosystem of organizations and our global team. We also have two investment vehicles. So we're focused on how do we mobilize more aligned capital into these structures. That's true in the United States as well. And I think what we're seeing in Germany is now we're in this phase of political work where we've hacked a legal system basically to come up with an affordable model for steward ownership for younger businesses. And now we're lobbying for a new corporate form specifically for these companies so that we can unleash the demand and provide an accessible vehicle. In the US, we're following the same path. It's more complicated here for all the reasons that I mentioned, but also because, to your point, there are all of these examples in Northern Europe in particular of foundation-owned or steward-owned businesses. And in the US, we don't have those. We don't have them because of a tax ruling from the middle of the 20th century. It wasn't a, it's not, the lack of demand isn't the problem. It was really just a legal hurdle. And so we've had to really focus on creating these examples and doing compelling storytelling in order to get close to the cultural understanding that I think my colleagues in Germany really started with.
Yeah, especially here in Germany, you guys are very loud at the moment. 2 weeks ago, you had an event with a lot of high politicians talking about the Purpose GmbH. So, yeah, creating that new legal entity you were just talking about. So, yeah, it's a big topic currently here in the business world. And we were asking ourselves, like, what's there even like not to like about steward ownership? So in your own explanation, you said, okay, self-governance is like one huge part. So, okay, control remains within the company. And also you say profits serve the purpose. So, yeah, those are two things. Bulls and I were like, yeah, that sounds awesome. But Camille, you are, I'm guessing, in touch with a lot of different stakeholders, and a lot of people, I'm guessing, also have like arguments against it. So what are those arguments?
I think the main argument that we hear from people, particularly as it relates to younger business, is how you're going to capitalize this. Investors, you know, startup investment has been really informed by where I sit here in San Francisco and Silicon Valley and, you know, traditional venture capital, traditional, even though it's only existed for a couple of decades, but somehow it's the standard bearer. And I think the pushback that we hear a lot from folks is, well, you can't actually achieve a risk-adjusted return if you are capping or somehow limiting investor upside by not selling the business. And you know, if your objective as an investor is to extract as much money as possible from organizations, which I think, you know, is not a question that many people ask themselves, I think that that's just the assumption, is that you're going to try to make as much money as possible. Yeah, maybe that works for you. But there are a lot of investors out there that are really looking to invest in long-term impact. and creating sustainable businesses. So,
is that like a trend you're seeing, especially in San Francisco? Because you just mentioned Silicon Valley. I think that's the mecca of startup investing. And I think like you just said, they invest in unicorns. We also have like this term of zebras. I guess you already know too. You're sitting in San Francisco. What's it like at the moment in 2021?
Not to get too technical, I think that there's a lot of interest in revenue-based financing as an alternative instrument. I think we are not done yet in making investment capital more accessible. And I think that's particularly felt for businesses that are post-revenue, but pre-profitability, that are looking for growth capital, and they want to transition to steward ownership. We are seeing more movement of dollars. And so I'm super hopeful that over the next couple of years, as more successful examples are created, that we will see more and more money moving in this direction. I think in the US, we also have a particular opportunity given the focus on racial equity and diversity, equity, inclusion, that there's an argument to be made that extracting from startups that are run by folks of color is inherently misaligned with the ideals of, you know, wanting to create more prosperity in communities that have been historically marginalized. And so how do you square the form of capital with the type of impact you're striving for?
I want to stay a little bit on this aspect of people criticizing this concept or what might be. Critics often say that the purpose construct in itself is still too sort of abstract and would need further, I would call it, concretization, so that it should be actually defined what purpose actually is and what's not, maybe for people to understand it easier or whatnot. How convinced are you that this idea and this concept is not just some sort of short-term hype, but rather like a promising, sustainable, and future-oriented economic evolution? Or how would you convince those other people that might suggest that this is otherwise?
I think that there is by default a purpose, and that purpose is profit maximization. And so that already exists. That is the default mode in the system. And so when we talk about the purpose of a company, I don't think that we necessarily need to equate it with the language that we're using from a marketing perspective about why all these businesses are such good actors. I don't think of that as the definition of purpose that we're talking about. I think of it as, how are decisions being made day to day within an organization? Who's making those decisions? And what are the guiding lights behind, you know, what's guiding that force? In the US, one of the forms that we use is called a perpetual purpose trust, which is basically our equivalent of foundation ownership. And we go through this experience with businesses where they have to actually define their purpose. They're redefining what the fiduciary duty is that the board is going to report to the trust on. And it's really amazing what these organizations come up with, because you have typically some combination of the company's core mission and then a set of standards that they are going to hold themselves accountable to, whether that be sharing profits with employees, whether that be standards about the environment, whether that be how they treat their stakeholders. Each one is totally unique and depends on the company. But having now watched dozens of organizations define purpose as through this legal form, I have no doubt that purpose is something that is deeper than profit. And
Camille, I think you can take over our podcast after that. I also love the default mode of companies. I'm gonna write that down, because we often talk about purpose and like, what's purpose in a business term. I love that explanation, and everything you just elaborated on. So Camille, I think you should become our— you should just take—
great—
over.
New co-host.
Yeah. Happy to.
Yeah. And to be honest, of course, we were really psyched about inviting you guys to our podcast, just because we even like share the name. And the more we read about y'all, we like the more interesting it got, because like purpose economy is I think the term you all like fit under. And then if the people, maybe even after this episode, we'll do more research, you'll see that you actually have like four legal entities in that purpose economy, two of which are nonprofit and two are which are for profit. So the nonprofits, I think they do like the research and also maybe like this episode, like doing like a awareness for purpose. That's also where you're located, right? At the Purpose Foundation. And then you also have like the second part, which, yeah, I really got into like as a nerd, I don't know. But I love that you also like do the advising and the investment part. So maybe to shed light on the second part, what are companies the purpose economy invests in, and what makes you different from others?
So we mobilized capital for steward ownership in order to be able to basically sit at the table with other investors on the side of being an investor to move the needle in the direction of steward ownership. And we identified two places in the biography of a business where raising capital becomes really important. One is the Series A mark, which is this point where typically you're now for the first time giving up control and distributing ownership rather than just taking, you know, some form of a convertible note is typically the alternative or what you do before. That's one pain point. And the other is you have a mature business, it's 30 years old and the founder still has majority stake and that person needs to retire. They need liquidity from the business, but they don't want to sell. And how do you create a recapitalization moment? Oh, don't know if you can hear the fire alarms in the back, the fire trucks. How do you create a recapitalization moment that provides the founder with liquidity but protects the legacy of the business through ownership? And so, to address these needs, we have Purpose Ventures, which is focused on earlier seed and Series A investments, and Purpose Evergreen Capital, which is an alternative leverage buyout fund that is for mature businesses transitioning to steward ownership. We invest across business types through both vehicles. So we're not focused on food and agriculture or technology. The guiding principle behind our investment decisions is really around, you know, not only is it a prudent investment, but also are we creating new exciting examples of steward ownership in the market across different industries and contexts?
So Moritz, there's basically a pretty easy question that I guess you would like to ask after Camille explained just all that she explained. But I can ask her that as well. How do you guys actually make money?
So we are funded through a combination of all of the grant work that we do, the philanthropic side, which is, as you said, research, creating infrastructure and open source materials and awareness, content, thought leadership. And then we also, you know, take, there's a fee structure built into both of the capital vehicles. And we do advising. So we consult with businesses pretty much of all sizes. And so, you know, we have different teams and folks work just for the foundation or just for consulting or just for the investment vehicles. But we strive to collaborate on the overarching strategy between those resources.
Yeah, that's actually like a very simple question. But sometimes like that question pops up because it's not so clear. But now I understand your business model.
Yeah, I think anytime there's a combination of nonprofit and for-purpose entities, and, you know, it's somewhat opaque. There are lots of legal structures in our purpose octopus internationally. So fair enough.
That's a good term, actually, purpose octopus.
Yeah, and we actually like had some purpose companies also on our podcast. So, for example, Einhorn or Ecosia, just to name two, or to name another one, Watt Plastic. So you just mentioned with the advising part, so the for-profit part, you help companies to maybe transform into purpose entities. Have you also been part of such a journey? And is there like some story you can tell us of like what that feeling or how that change feels for that company?
Yeah. I think the best example I can give is actually of a later stage business. So we helped a company here in the US called Organically Grown Company transition to steward ownership 3 years ago now. It's the second largest wholesale distributor of organic produce in the country. And we helped them transition into this trust structure. And they do an annual gathering now. And at that annual gathering, all of the stakeholders, so they have farmers and investors and employees and consumers, they all gather together. In pre-pandemic time, it was a lovely gathering in person. Now it's on Zoom, which is not quite as magical. And they get together to talk about how they're stewarding the business. Like, you could argue that the stakeholders' interests don't necessarily align. If farmers get paid for more for their produce, that means investors are going to get less money. You know, and the same goes for employees. And yet, rather than being in confrontation with each other, everyone was really on the same side of the table talking about how do we navigate together these trade-offs between what you need as a group of stakeholders contributing to value versus what I need as a member of this stakeholder group. And I say this as an example because I think that it represents this transformative nature of what happens when you go from a paradigm of this business exists so that somebody can get rich to a notion of this organization exists to pursue a purpose that has, you know, benefit and consequences for a wider group of people and stakeholders, including the planet. And that is a culturally, socially, economically, like very different mode to be operating in. And it's really exciting when people sign the papers. They usually go through a really long process. They're super excited and they sign the papers and there's just feeling of like, oh, okay, we're finally in the clothes that we want to be in as an organization. Like it, we're fundamentally reflected in the way we want to be through our legal structure now.
That's actually a great example, not only for us, but I think also for our listeners to get a better understanding once again what it actually is that you guys are doing. Before we slowly but surely come to an end of our great talk. You're a part of the purpose economy. We know that much. This term in itself was basically a phrase that was coined by someone named Aaron Hurst, who was also an entrepreneur, as we have researched. And he did so in order to describe the way in which work is changing to reflect the desire amongst employees to actually realize a higher, I would call it, societal purpose in their work, to maybe put an, yeah, I would call it exclamation mark to our episode, or to put a dot behind it. In your own words, what would you say, maybe in one or two sentences, what's at the core of your company's existence, and basically why do you guys exist?
I'm going to just speak for myself personally. There's a version of this that's for the organization. I think that we exist to help move into a different thinking of how we distribute power and wealth in our economy. That's fundamentally what drives me behind this. And I think that entrepreneurs in the 21st century are really important actors and agents in defining what the future looks like. And so that combination and targeting people inside of organizations to advocate for that change and to realize that change is, yeah, it's great.
Okay, so
does that answer your question for us?
That's perfect. That works. Okay. For me, of course.
The listeners should see Boris smiling at this moment. Camille, we said we're gonna do a purpose preguntas part two, and here it comes. So yeah, many companies are part of your ecosystem. We already just mentioned like three of them. You already just mentioned another one from the US. And can you tell us, like, maybe in secret, which one is your favorite?
Okay, don't tell anybody else. I'm going to use another US example because we've worked with them for a long time. It's Firebrand Bakery in Oakland. I love Matt, the entrepreneur, and I love what he's done with his business. And yeah, it's a huge point of inspiration and building an organization to see how they do it.
Okay, we have to note that down next time we're in Oakland, whenever that might be. after the pandemic, of course. Next question. Our last guest was pretty sure in his assessment that NGOs actually achieve greater impact due to the lack of financial motivations. So what's your take on that? Aren't businesses actually the leverage for positive impact?
It's not an either or. We need all of the good organizations and energy in the world to tackle our problems. And we don't need to create a competition between is for-profit or nonprofit the right approach. There are good and bad examples in both of those buckets. I think that this binary between the two is a reflection of a complete tax, right? Ultimately, which falls into which category is how a state views the capital that lives inside of it. But at the end of the day, in both situations, we're talking about people inside of organizations doing stuff. It's just human beings.
I think any other...
Sorry to whoever that person is.
Yeah, we won't tell them. No, I think any other answer actually would have surprises after that talk we just had. Okay, third question. Where do you see purpose economy in the, maybe next 2 to 3 years?
In Europe... In Germany, I hope we have passed a new legal form and unleashed a generation of purpose, Gigambe has. Internationally, we experience so much demand from people from all corners of the planet wanting to do this. And I hope that we have become really good at servicing that need. In the US, I want to have moved as much money as possible into steward ownership businesses because money is the language and currency of our culture here. So yeah, I think there's going to be policy work. I hope that there's lots of exciting collaborations. This is not a very short answer, sorry, but the joy of our work is that we're solving kind of impossible problems. And so, you know, I think that there is a very clear direction of where we are going, but I'm also very confident that the tools that we use to get there, I can't yet envision.
That's a good future actually to look forward to, I think. What would you say was your greatest achievement and or your biggest fail so far in working at the Purpose Foundation? Biggest fail actually sounds rather hard.
No, that's okay. I'm a big fan of failure.
This podcast.
Good one. Have I done that bad of a job? I think my biggest failure, honestly, my biggest failure, I think, has like been internal, which is we are not the experts in anything that we touch, right? We're not deep legal experts. We're not deep financial analysts. We're not deep policy people. And on and on and on. And I think part of the failure that I experienced, particularly in the first year or two of doing this work, is feeling this constant sense of failure because I wasn't the expert in the room who knew everything. And it took me a while to realize, like, oh, that doesn't matter. One, like, actually, playing the role of seeing the connection between these different sets of deep knowledge is a really important role to play. The actors of the world are not going to be the ones to change it. So I think I've become a little bit more patient with myself over the course of doing this work. My greatest accomplishment was the first time that I got philanthropic money in the US. That was amazing. I didn't think that that would ever happen. And so I celebrated.
Well deserved, yeah. And yeah, the last Purpose Pregunta is actually one we ask all our guests. And yeah, you're the expert, actually, like more than all the other guests we had before, because what's a company, a person, someone we should have on our radar, like on the lookout for, maybe inviting to the podcast or for our network to check out, where you say, okay, these guys are really purpose-driven.
From a business perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great question. I mean, you mentioned Wild Plastic. I think what they're doing is phenomenal, and I think how they're doing it is really phenomenal. So if you haven't had them already, you should definitely have them on the podcast. You're smiling, have you?
We did, yeah.
Okay.
So that's a great example.
Yes. Yeah.
Shout out to Chris.
I'm glad.
And Nadia.
Yeah. I think beyond them, you should have Matt from Firebrand on the podcast. He has a story that I think is very unique. And it's
which company? I didn't understand. Sorry.
Firebrand Bakery, that I mentioned before.
Yeah, Moritz. Yeah. I think we have to go to Oakland eventually.
I think you do too. And the bread's delicious. Matt's whole business is about hiring formerly incarcerated folks and people who are formerly without homes. And he uses the vehicle of the business in this really exceptional way. And I think it's just a shining example of how, if you build the right structures and invest the time, how you can integrate your purpose into all the decisions that you make in a way that really creates consistency and like authenticity in what you're saying, which, to go back to purpose washing, is, I think, the problem. So,
yeah, good bread, good purpose, California. Moritz, I don't know about you, but I'm in.
Yep.
Come on over.
Okay.
I'll meet you for a croissant.
Camille, I'm just looking at the time and I'm just realizing we've already been talking for over 40 minutes. And that was, I don't know, a really awesome episode. And I can just say thank you for, yeah, your shared insights. And it was, yeah, a really big pleasure for us having you here. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much for including us. This was really fun. Normally, is this going to be included?
Yeah, this is going
to. Okay. When you tell me to pause, I'll pause. I was just going to say, a lot of interviews are not as joyful as this is. It's nice to feel like it's a conversation. Sometimes it can feel like a little stiff. So thank you.
We'll certainly include that. Be sure of that. No. Thank you. Thank you so much, Camille. It was a real, real big pleasure to talk to you, and really happy to stay in touch.
Yeah, me too. Thank you both.
Moritz, episode 25 is in the books officially. A lot of purpose, a lot of interesting people. What did you learn today? What was new about purpose?
Well, first of all, I learned that there are like big differences between the US and Germany. I like that she touched upon that point a lot. And this general sense of how to think business, maybe. So the way she put it, with the default mode of like a company's purpose, and maybe like questioning that is definitely something I will take away from this episode. And of course, that Camille is like really awesome. Or am I right?
Yeah. Key takeaway. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I also really like that answer, actually, with the default answer, I would call it. And basically this whole construct explained again more in more detail, because you can do as much research as you want to prior to that, but if you have a real expert, which she definitely was, someone like she explains it to you, I think she could have gone a lot deeper, but then yeah. It would
and I think know, I think she yeah, did like the perfect mix of giving the right information and not going way into like these legal details, because like 2 days ago I was in this legal rabbit hole. I loved these legal facts, of course, but I hope she or that all our listeners now know what a purpose GmbH or a purpose company actually could mean in the future. And mm-hmm. that we focus a lot, I think, now, like on the US market, but a term we both talked about was also like the term of like Mittelstand here in Germany, and like how this purpose GmbH or like this new legal entity could like help the German Mittelstand to, yeah, go on to the next generation. And yeah, I mean, both of us were employees, so I would love to have control over the company I'm working for, or knowing that the that this power always stays within the company. And yeah, I think we didn't we talk with Linda about like what that does to you as an employee?
Yeah, with Linda Preil from Einhorn Youth. I think we did. It was actually quite a long time ago, but I think we did, yeah. And Einhorn in itself is a rather good example for this construct that she also, Camille, also touched upon a few good examples to make it more clear to not only us, but I think to our listeners as well. And now we also know, Moritz, that we actually have to go to Oakland to visit a certain bakery. So
yeah, that's that. I think that's your biggest key takeaway. I just saw your eyes like, no, oh, a bakery, Oakland, all right.
Yeah, I'm in. I told you, I'm in.
Yeah, I think that was a nice episode, or at least it was for us too. I think we've been laughing the entire time, like, or smiling. It was really a lot of fun, and I think that's like the best way to like go into our summer break we're gonna take after this episode.
What?
Yeah. I'm really happy to just like have a couple weeks off, refresh, and how about you? You're looking forward to our summer break?
That's actually a decent mode to announce it, I have to say. You just like casually mentioned it. Yeah. I think we have to give ourselves a little time off to look back at what we did or who we actually talked to. I mean, episode 25. It's quite a lot of work and quite a lot of joy also that we have put into this project. So yeah, a little time to reflect and to also plan ahead.
Yeah, and Boris and I are still very happy about all the feedback we're getting, especially on like the LinkedIn messages from all you guys. So thanks for that. And now we're going to be on break. You guys can use that break and tell us your wishes about the companies, about the people you want to have on this podcast. We'll invite them and maybe they'll say yes. So yeah.
Yep, that's right. And also get a little break from us two talking heads.
Yeah, we're not finding an end.
Quite nice as well, I think. No, I think I don't want to go to summer break. No, actually we are. So guys, thank you. Thank you all so much for all your feedback and your kind words, positive feedback. And we'll be back soon and we'll let you know as soon as possible when we're coming back with a new episode.
Okay, bye Boris.
Bye guys.
That's all, folks.